colonies, where those crazy heirs of Euros live. I hear that's a whole other story. I nodded politely, more concerned with my cleavage than a conservative group of Euros devotees. Honestly, with the threat hanging over Cedric for his Alanzan faith, I kind of felt that my life would be a lot simpler avoiding religion of any kind. If not for the fight with Tamsin, all this preparation would have been an enjoyable time. "She'll come around," Mira told me one day. "I know she will." Mira had still been playing diplomat, talking insistently with both of us in the hopes of mending the rift. "Will she?" I asked. "Has she given any sign she will?" Mira made a face. "No, but it can't last. Not even for her. Maybe once we're there, and she's got a choice of suitors, she'll let go of things?" "Maybe," I agreed. My unexpected advancement was still a subject of much speculation in the house, though no one came anywhere near to guessing the truth. I knew Mira was among those who wondered, but she was friend enough not to push me on it. It seemed she carried her own secrets, and could respect those of others. The final blow in the feud with Tamsin came on the day we set sail. We'd travelled to the port city of Culver, in western Ostrid, where Jasper's two commissioned ships waited. It was a cold, blustery day, and as we huddled near the docks, I overheard some of the sailors muttering about a winter crossing. Mistress Masterson had also mentioned it to Jasper, and he'd shrugged it off, saying we were close enough to spring to be free of storms. If he got the jump on other traders coming over in the spring, he could get a higher profit for the rest of the goods he was transporting. Mistress Masterson and the other manor mistresses had come with us, though not all would be going to Adoria. "You'll be in the capable hands of Mistress Culpepper when you arrive," Mistress Masterson told us. The cold sea wind whipped around us, and I pulled my cloak tighter. "She runs things on the Adorian side, and will look after you." Despite her confident words, I could see concern in Mistress Masterson's features. She'd taught us with a prim and often strict countenance, but the gentleness in her features now showed her underlying affection. "Listen to what you're told there, and remember what you've learned here," advised the Swan Ridge mistress.
"And don't talk to the sailors," said another mistress. "Keep to yourselves, and always go in groups if you leave your quarters."
She didn't have to tell us that. The sailors loading our belongings and Jasper's cargo were a burly, rough-looking lot. I avoided eye contact as they moved past us with their loads. My understanding was that they'd been very strongly warned against socializing with us, but one could never be too careful. Jasper's eye was on them now as he directed which ships would carry which goods. Between us and his trade, he was certain to make a good profit from this trip, and I thought it a shame he couldn't use that money to help his son. But from what I'd observed, Cedric was right to guess his father wouldn't endorse alternative religious beliefs. Cedric himself showed up near boarding time, running typically late. By then the goods were on board, and it was our turn. Jasper read our names from a list, indicating which ship we'd take. Our manor was travelling on the Good Hope, so it was a shock when I heard Tamsin's name read for the Grey Gull. Even Mira was surprised. Like me, I don't think she'd actually thought Tamsin would take our fight to this extreme.
"Tamsin,"
she said in disbelief, watching as our friend walked past us. But Tamsin didn't look back, and her only pause was to hand Mistress Masterson a stack of letters and say, "Thank you for taking care of these." Then she continued on. My heart sank as she boarded the other ship. I'd chosen Cedric's interests over hers, and sometimes, particularly when I had those middle-of-the-night wakings, I'd question if I'd made the right choice.
"She'll come around," reiterated Mira as we walked up the dock. She didn't sound as confident as usual.
"She has to. This journey would give her a lot of time to think." Our cabin on the Good Hope was small, as to be expected, with six narrow bunk beds. Mira and I were rooming with three other Blue Spring girls, as well as one named Martha from Swan Ridge Manor. She was the one Tamsin had managed to trade with. Our rooms were near those of the other Glittering Court girls, as well as that of Miss Bradley, the mistress from Dunford Manor. She met with us in the small common room we'd be using for our meals, reiterating much of what we'd heard on the docks about where we could go and what we could do. The options were limited, and 2 months in such cramped quarters seemed like a very long time. When we finally set sail, we all went above deck to observe.
My heart hammered as I watched the lines brought in and sailors at work. I'd done many things as the Countess of Rothford, but never a journey of this magnitude. I'd been on a ship to Lorendy once as a child, but remembered little of it. That trip took only a day across the narrow channel that separated Osfrid from its continental neighbour. Beside us the grey gull was also casting off, and I could make out Tamsin's bright hair among the girls gathered there. "Did you come from Siminica by ship?" I asked Mira, suddenly realizing I'd never asked her before. Her eyes were on Osfrid's retreating shore, and I wondered if she regretted leaving the country she'd taken refuge in. "Some of it. It's expensive to do the whole journey by ship, and most of us fleeing the war couldn't afford it. The group I was with traveled overland and then took a ship from Belgia." She smiled, struck by memory. "If you think our cabin's small, you should have seen that Belgian ship. No one even had a bed. We were in the cargo hold. Fortunately, that trip was only a few days." I squeezed her arm, realizing I'd never fully comprehended how much she'd gone through. "It must have been awful." She shrugged. "It was what it was. It's the past."
"And you're moving on to better things now," Cedric said, strolling up beside us.
His hands were in the pockets of the scarlet greatcoat, reminding me of that night I'd found him in the Alanzan ritual. In this clothing he looked like a proper merchant or scholar, but the wind wreaking havoc on his hair gave him an untamed edge, reminding me of when he'd spoken of letting his passions run wild. I shivered.
"I hope so," said Mira. "What kind of room do you have?"
"I suppose you're staying in a luxury stateroom," I teased.
"That would be my father. I'm in a cabin like yours, bunking with other passengers."
He nodded toward a group of men on the other side of the deck, their clothing and manners displaying a wide variety of backgrounds.
"Who are they?"
I asked, curious as to who else was going to the New World. One man with black hair whipping in the wind was studying me. If he'd shaved and put on unwrinkled clothes this morning, he might have been dashing. When he saw I'd noticed him, he gave a polite nod and looked away.
"Mostly merchants. A few adventurers. The ones I'm rooming with are nice enough. Terribly curious about you girls, as one might imagine."
"Any potential suitors?" I asked. "Shall I be putting on the charm?"
"I didn't know it ever went away."
Cedric studied the men a few moments and shook his head.
"Well, I don't think they're that successful yet. None of them could afford any of you."
A few girls standing nearby overheard his words and turned speculative gazes to the cluster of men. Maybe this group wasn't wildly successful, but some of them looked like they were doing well enough with their lives. I could guess my peers' thoughts. For most of them, coming from impoverished backgrounds, any of these gentlemen would be a great step up in the world. What was in store if the men in Adoria surpassed this? After the thrill of our departure wore off, most of the girls retired to their rooms. Not long into our journey, some returned above deck once seasickness set in. I felt a little queasy now and then, but soon overcame it. Mira never went through it at all. Miss Bradley preferred we stay down below, but didn't discourage our strolls, so long as we did them in groups. Her biggest concern seemed to be that we apply daily moisturizers to our faces, lest the salt water roughen our skin before we got to Adoria. Mira was particularly restless and hated being cooped up. I accompanied her as often as I could, though I knew she sneaked up on her own sometimes. "What do you think Tamsin's doing?" I asked one day. Mira and I stood at the rail, watching the grey gull. It was never out of our sight, and I squinted, hoping to catch sight of red hair.
"Making plans," said Mira, "sizing up the other girls and figuring out how to best them."
I smiled at the thought, knowing she was right. "Her rivals are there, aren't they? The girls who tied her?" Mira nodded. "Maybe this was all a ruse, so that she could spy on the competition."
"I wish it was."
There was always an ache in my chest when I studied the other ship. It was amazing how much I missed Tamsin's calculating ways, and the rift between us seemed to overshadow any pleasure I might have taken from this journey. Mira, brave as ever, walked right up to the railing and peered down at the water. It made me shiver. I had a constant fear of her being pulled over the edge. Averting my eyes from her, I studied the far reaches of the bluish-gray sea. Not unlike Cedric's eyes, I supposed.
"So beautiful," I murmured.
"Your first voyage?"
I turned and saw the man who'd been watching me that first day, the one who either needed to shave or just grow a proper beard. In fact, the more I studied him, the more I just wanted to, well, neaten him up. His rumpled clothing was respectable enough, but, as Cedric had pointed out, hardly in the class of someone who could afford us.
"I'm sorry," he said, smiling. "We're not supposed to talk without a formal introduction, right?"
"Well, these aren't very formal settings," I said, as Mira came to stand beside me again. "I'm Adelaide Bailey, and this is Mira Viana."
"Grant Elliot," he replied. "I take my hat off if I had one, but I learned long ago that it's not even worth wearing one out in this wind."
"You've been to Adoria before?" Mira asked.
"Last year. I have a stake in a store that outfits people for exploration and wilderness survival. My partner ran it over the winter, and now I'm coming back."
Mira's eyes lit up. "Have you done much exploring yourself, Mr. Elliot?"
"Here and there," he replied, turning from her and focusing back on me. "Nothing you'd find interesting. Now help me understand how your organization works. You're ranked by gemstone, right? And you're the top one?"
"The diamond," I affirmed, "and Mira's a garnet."
"So that means you'll get to go to all sorts of..." "There you are!" Cedric strolled up to us, smiling when he saw Grant. "Looks like the three of you have already met. Mr. Elliot is one of the men who shares a cabin with me.
Adelaide, I need to borrow you for a moment."
He nodded toward another group of our girls a short distance away. "Mira, will you be able to go back down below with them when they leave? I think they're going soon."
"Of course," said Mira. "And perhaps Mr. Elliot could tell me more about his business."
Grant shook his head. "I'd love to, but I just remembered something I have to follow up on."
He walked away, and Mira wandered over to the other girls. Cedric beckoned me to follow him, and I expected us to simply find some private part of the deck to talk. Instead, he went below, leading me through the ship's narrow inner passages until we reached a cargo hold, piled high with crates.
"What in the world are we doing here?"
I asked as he shut the door behind us. He waved me forward past several rows of crates, and then gestured grandly.
"Your art studio, madam."
I peered into a narrow space shielded by a large stack of boxes and found a canvas and some paints.
"I smuggled them aboard, and waited until I could find a place seldom visited," he explained, clearly proud of his cunning.
I knelt down to look at the paints, spreading my skirts around me. I examined the pots one by one.
"Oils?" "Does that make a difference?" he asked.
"It affects what I can do. I can't do a Florencio. His medium's different."
Cedric's earlier pride faltered. "I didn't know. Will you be able to do something?"
"Sure." I ran through a mental list of various artists' works I'd seen, including the types of pigments and canvases used. I had a pretty good memory for detail. The question would be choosing which style was within my skill set.
"Theodoros," I said at last. "I'm a Medicosi painter. I can do one of his.
A lot of their trade goes through Seminica, and with all the chaos there right now, a rogue painting being smuggled out wouldn't be that extraordinary."
"Can you do it in a little less than 2 months?
I hesitated. "I suppose. Especially if I can get a couple of hours each day."
"I'll make sure of it," he said adamantly. "We'll make this happen."
When he simply stood there and watched me expectantly, I exclaimed, "What, right now?"
"Why not? We're short on time."
"I can't just jump into a major work, especially with you staring at me the whole time." He backed up, but not by much.
"Well, I can't leave you. I need to be around in case someone comes in."
"Well, if they do, it's not going to save us from being caught in art forgery," I snapped.
"It'll save you from some wandering sailor.
Now, is there anything else you need?"
"More space, more time, a ship that isn't constantly swaying, and maybe something to eat that isn't dried out and preserved. I'd kill for a honey cake."
Seeing his exasperated look, I said, "Hey, you try just jumping into reproducing one of the greatest artists out there. I want to help you, but I need to think this through." After pondering Theodorus's work for the better part of an hour, I finally set to sketching charcoal on the canvas and began planning out the scene. Theodorus was famous for a series of 4 paintings called The Lady of the Fountain. Each also had a number. They were all different angles and poses of a young woman standing by a fountain, and had been created at different times. Occasionally another person would be included, a man, a child. Passing off a fifth, just discovered one, would hopefully be viable. My marks were tentative at first. The bizarre, cramped setting didn't help any. Neither did the constant rocking of the ship. I finally decided a back view of the woman would be easiest, and I had to remember the exact position of the fountain and number of trees around it. As time passed, I grew more confident and was happy to get lost in the work. It took my mind away from the deception I was enmeshed in, and that constant ache over Tamsin. I forgot Cedric was there and jumped when he spoke. "Adelaide, we've got to go."
"Do we?"
I nodded toward the canvas. "I'm not done with the sketch." "We've already been gone longer than we should have. It's nearly dinner time, and I'm hoping Miss Bradley hasn't been looking for you." I reluctantly surrendered the charcoal and watched as Cedric neatly concealed everything away.
"Be careful," I warned. "Don't tear that canvas."
"Maybe it'll just add to the authenticity of being smuggled out through dangerous conditions."
"Maybe," I said, stretching my cramped muscles. "But a painting that makes it out intact will fetch a better price for poor, penniless heathens.
A buyer won't question the miracle to have something neat and tidy hanging in his home."
"Well, this poor, penniless heathen is grateful."
We left the cargo room, but stopped again in the narrow corridor just before we reached the glittering quartz set of rooms. He lowered his voice.
"Where did you learn to do that, anyway?
The painting?"
"Lots of people know how to paint. Not many can do that kind of imitation."
"Another weighty question."
"My father,"
I said after several long moments.
"It was a game we played. To test my memory."
He quickly noticed the change in me.
"I'm sorry. I didn't mean to bring up something upsetting. But he must have been remarkable to have that kind of faith in you.
From what I've seen, most noblemen just care about their daughters behaving politely and marrying well."
"He was interested in those things too. But I don't think what I'm about to do is exactly the marriage he had in mind."
"Do you know about Rupert, 1st Earl of Rothford?"
"Of course. All Osfridians know about him."
Cedric gave me a meaningful look. "And I know who his direct descendants are." Throughout my entire life, I've had the importance of that drilled into me. What a responsibility that title is. I leaned against the rough wooden wall, thinking of Grandmama. Sometimes I wonder if I'm tarnishing that heritage. I don't know. Cedric's expression softened.
"Well, I know two things. For you to be Countess, he's one of the rare progenitors to let his title be passed to his female descendants. Most don't do that. Which means he wasn't someone who believed in abiding by archaic rules. You should be proud of that."
"You don't need to pitch me on my own ancestor. What's the other thing you allegedly know?"
"There's no allegedly about it. Rupert left a comfortable life back on the continent, sailing west to a savage land he knew little about. He didn't do it because it was the safe choice, or because it was the easy choice. He did it because it was the right choice. Because he knew in his bones that staying in the old land was draining him, and he had to move on to greater things. He didn't tarnish his heritage. He was brave and bold."
Cedric looked at me meaningfully.
"Sound like anyone we both know?"
"Are you talking about yourself?" I started to turn away before he could see my smile, but he caught my hand and pulled me back. When I looked at him, I felt my mirth vanish. There was something disconcertingly serious in his face. The hall suddenly seemed very small, the space between us even smaller.
"Never underestimate your own worth," he told me.
"I certainly never have." I wanted him to smile again or make a joke, and when he didn't, I broke away. "I have to go. I'll see you later." I hurried off to my room, afraid of what I'd see if I looked back.
Chapter 11. Cedric was nervous in those first days. He'd expected me to put brush to canvas and start instantly creating people and scenery. Those things would come, but first I had to do the groundwork. I sketched and laid base colours, and slowly, bit by bit, the work began to come to life. Each time I finished a session, I always felt as though I hadn't had enough time. The minutes flew by, and I'd have a pang of worry that I wasn't going to be able to finish before the end of our journey. Outside of my makeshift art studio, however, my painting time was noticeably long.
"There you are!"
exclaimed Miss Bradley one evening. I hadn't been able to leave the storage room until some paint had properly set, making me late for dinner in our common room. All the other girls were seated, their eyes locked on me as I stood in the doorway. On a long trip like this, anyone getting in trouble was high entertainment. "I'm sorry, ma'am." I clasped my hands in front of me and tried to look contrite. I was taking a walk on the deck, and when I started to come back, there was a group of sailors in my way in the stairwell, doing some sort of repair. I didn't want to have to pass so close to them, so I waited, discreetly, until they were done. I thought that was the proper thing to do. Miss Bradley tisked. "The proper thing to do would have not been to go above deck alone." At least I wasn't alone in this crime. A few other girls with cabin fever had been chastised repeatedly, too. "I'm sorry," I said again. "I just needed some air. I get nauseous down here sometimes." She surveyed me a moment longer and then nodded for me to take a seat. "Very well. But don't let it happen again. And that goes for all of you." Everyone nodded meekly, knowing full well this would probably happen again. I breathed a sigh of relief and settled next to Mira. Since this business with Cedric had started, I hadn't been able to spend much time with her. At first she'd commented on it and tried to include me in excursions, but she'd eventually given up. Now when I wasn't painting, I'd sometimes find her alone in our room, rereading her Saminican swashbuckling stories. Other times I couldn't find Mira around at all. "Another decadent meal," she said, handing me a basket of hardtack. I picked up one of the stiff biscuits with a scowl and then added some pickled cabbage from a serving platter. Our lessons in fine dining and etiquette weren't of much use at the moment, as we subsisted on this simple ship's fare. The food in and of itself didn't bother me so much as eating the same thing each day did. I'd lifted the hardtack to my mouth when Clara suddenly said, "Isn't it raining up above? Why aren't you wet, Adelaide?" I froze as all eyes once again swiveled toward me. "I kept under cover," I said at last. "I knew Miss Bradley wouldn't want us to ruin our clothes, or even our hair. Maybe we aren't in Adoria yet, but we should still maintain certain standards." Sure of my footing now, I smiled sweetly at Clara. "I can understand why you might not think of those things on a trip like this, but as our cohort's diamond, I find it something I must constantly keep in mind." "Excellent point," said Miss Bradley. "Just because we're in rough conditions, it doesn't mean we should be any less diligent about our manners and appearances. You're going to have to be in best form the instant we reach Adoria. As soon as word of our ship's arrival spreads, there'll be prospective suitors down at the docks to watch you come ashore and size up this year's group." Those words took all of us aback for a moment. It wasn't anything that had ever come up before. I suppose I shouldn't have been surprised, however. Everything we'd done had been scrutinized at Blue Spring Manor, with the understanding that we'd continue to be scrutinized in the New World. Why not from the first moment we stepped on shore?
"Sized up like livestock."
Mira pitched her voice low, but Miss Bradley heard her.
"There are young ladies begging in the streets of Osfrid who'd love to have the opportunity to be dressed up and sized up," she said sharply. "I'm sure if you'd like to join them, arrangements can be made for you to return with the Thorns to Osfrid at the end of the summer."
While most of our household now accepted Mira, Miss Bradley obviously hadn't come to terms with having a Sir Minikin in our cohort.
"Of course not, ma'am," said Mira. "Forgive me."
Her tone was as apologetic as mine had been, and like me, she wasn't sincere. "I think if Mira had her way, she wouldn't get married," I told Cedric on our way to the cargo room one day. Long weeks had passed, and amazingly this ocean journey was nearing its end. "Sometimes I just feel like she's here because she has nothing better to do." He put his hand on my back to guide me around a pile of netting, taking up part of the hall. Since this enterprise had begun, we'd grown remarkably casual around each other.
"Compared to Saminica, this is probably better," he said.
"I suppose, but I wish she was more on board with what's in store. Whatever the means, this journey ends in us marrying in Adoria. She'd be happier if she was excited about that, just like the rest of us." As we neared the cargo room, we saw the captain and one of his men hurrying through. We stepped to the side, letting them pass. As they did, I heard the sailor say,
"It's no problem, Captain. I can handle it."
"I'm sure you can," came the gruff response, "but I don't like the looks of it. It came up too fast.
I'll steer us the next hour and then hand off.
Once they were clear of us, Cedric came to a halt.
Did you hear that? He asked.
Which part exactly?
The part about the captain taking the wheel.
So?
Cedric's face was alight with excitement.
So, it means he won't be in his stateroom for a while.
How would you like to add another crime to our growing list of offences?
I eyed him warily.
What are you talking about?
Come on.
He linked his arm through mine and turned us in a different direction from the cargo room. We soon entered the part of the ship used mostly by the crew. It made me uneasy, but Cedric walked with self-assurance. It seemed to make the crew members assume we were supposed to be there, and most of them were hustling about and preoccupied anyway. We reached an ornate door that marked the captain's chambers. After a furtive glance around, Cedric pushed it open and hurried me inside.
"I'm surprised it's unlocked," I said.
"He usually only locks it when he sleeps. During the day, most crew wouldn't have the nerve to come in."
"And we do?"
Even so, I couldn't help being fascinated by what I saw. The captain's room was a combination office and bedroom, and was more than twice the size of my room at Blue Spring Manor. An ornate desk immediately drew the eye to the center of the room, as did the window behind it.
I couldn't even believe there was a window in here. Grey sky and a deeper grey sea showed through it.
Brocade cloth hung around a bed on the room's far side, and other rich furnishings warmed the space as well. Candelabras, leather-bound books, and more. It was incredible to believe such a room existed when the rest of us were crammed into such humble quarters. Another wave sent us rolling, and Cedric put a hand on the desk to steady himself.
"I know you once said I could sell salvation to a priest, but there are some things even I can't get a captain to barter for. So we'll just, take them."
"We steal now?" I asked.
"He won't miss it. You'll understand soon."
Cedric walked up to a wall covered in shelves, directing his gaze to a closed cupboard up by the ceiling. He glanced around, expression turning puzzled.
"We want to get in there, but the ladder's gone. There was a small one in here the last time Father and I ate with him."
I walked over to the desk's chair, but it was bolted down. Perhaps I should have viewed that as a sign we needed to get out, but I was too intrigued. I had to know what would actually reduce him to stealing. Seeing no other options, I returned to Cedric's side.
"Okay, then. Lift me up."
"Hold on. What?"
"I can climb on those bookshelves. Use them for footholds. I'll just need you to get me started.
Unless you've changed your mind."
No. The shocking suggestion seemed to give even him pause.
"But can you climb in a dress?"
"Wouldn't be the first time," I said, thinking of childhood days when I used to get scolded for climbing trees on our country estate. "I could take it off, but then you'd have to deal with the shock of seeing me half naked again."
"I'm still recovering from the first time," he said wryly. He stood by the shelves. "Okay, let's go. No risk, no gain."
He put his hands around my waist and helped hoist me high until I could place my feet on one shelf and grip a higher one with my hands. I was pretty sure he got a face full of skirts and petticoats in the maneuver, but in a few moments he was able to let go as I maintained my hold and slowly scaled upward.
"I'll catch you if you fall," he said helpfully.
"I won't fall. You've got me confused with some helpless girl who balks at dishonest behavior."
"My mistake."
Despite my bold words, I nearly lost my grip when the ship rocked sharply again. We'd had relatively calm waters so far, and today's troubled conditions had already made normal movement around the ship difficult, let alone when attempting to climb shelving in a dress. I reached the upper cupboard and opened it, marveling at what I saw. Food, but not the dried, flavorless kind we consumed daily. A variety of jarred delicacies were displayed before me. Dried currants, nuts, caramel brittle, lemon cookies. Along with them, mysterious boxes and bags contained other hidden delights.
"Do you see a small green tin?" Cedric asked.
"That's what we want." After several moments of searching, I found it. I tossed the tin down to him and began my descent. It was a little easier this time, both because I was surer of my footholds and less scared of injury the nearer I got to the floor. When I was almost there, Cedric took hold of my waist again and swung me down the rest of the way.
"Easy,"
I declared. He started to let go, but another wave threw us both off. He held me tighter, shifting his weight so that we stayed upright. Some of the items in the room slid around with the sudden movement, but most were bolted down. Only when things calmed did he release me.
"Well,"
I asked,
"was it worth it?"
He opened the tin.
"You tell me."
"Honey cakes? How?"
"The captain has a sweet tooth, and after you said you'd kill for some, I figured I'd better take action for everyone's safety."
"Want one?"
"No, I want them all," I said.
"But let's go back to the cargo room before we're caught here." We checked the hall before making a break for it, but again, most crew barely noticed us. They moved swiftly and deftly over the rolling floor, while Cedric and I had to occasionally stop and hold the walls. When we finally completed the journey to our room, we hurried back to my art corner to divvy up our spoils.
"You said you wanted them all,"
Cedric teased when I held the tin out to him.
"You can have some, as a commission of sorts, even though I really did all the work."
I plucked one out and popped it into my mouth, closing my eyes as that sweetness flooded me. "I ate these all the time back home," I said after I'd swallowed it. "Never thought much of it, but after all that hardtack, I swear this is now pretty much the best thing I've eaten in my entire life." We quickly went through the tin, and Cedric urged me to take the last one. "I should give this one to Mira," I demurred. "She's the only friend I've got left." Cedric looked up.
"Oh?
Well, I'm sure that's what Tamsin would say."
"And the rest of us are just partners in crime."
"The rest are just... oh."
I felt foolish. "Sorry. I wasn't thinking. I mean, yes, of course you're my friend. I think." His smile was hard to read as he stretched his limbs before leaning against the wall beside me. "I don't think that makes me feel any better."
"No, you are. I've just never thought of men as friends before. In my life, they've always been a means to an end."
"Still not making me feel any better."
"Conquests?"
"A slight improvement. Maybe being your conquest wouldn't be so bad."
"After I got you to help me that first day, I figured you already were."
I looked over at him and saw a bit of honey near his lips. Without thinking, I leaned over and gently dabbed at it with my fingers. As soon as I brushed his lips with my fingertips, I felt my pulse quicken and a flush of heat sweep over me. Unable to resist, I traced the edges of his lips, suddenly wondering if they would taste just as sweet as the honey. Cedric took hold of my hand and laced his fingers with mine. The heat in his gaze made me heady, its intensity burning right through me. He didn't let go, and I felt as though the world around us was slowing down. I finally managed to ask, "What about me? Am I your friend?" He closed his eyes briefly, wrestling with some great dilemma, and then exhaled, "You are..." Before he could finish answering, the door to the cargo hold suddenly opened. Both of us jumped. A sailor appeared in the doorway, an older man with a shaved head and a slanted scar across his cheek. I was also pretty sure he was missing two fingers on his left hand. He seemed equally astonished to see us, and Cedric immediately straightened up, angling himself between me and the door. He put one arm protectively around me and rested his other hand on the pocket of his coat. The painting, at least, wasn't in view of the door.
"What are you doing here?"
the sailor demanded. Before either of us could answer, a smirk suddenly crossed the man's face.
"Oh, I see how it is. Getting a little alone time, eh? I guess Thorn's blushing beauties aren't so innocent after all."
It took me a moment to understand, and then I realized how it must look. Cedric's proximity and arm around me made it look as though, at the very least, we'd been cuddling. Understanding the implications, I did indeed blush.
"We're not..."
"She's having second thoughts about marrying an Adoria," said Cedric, interrupting my outrage. "She wants to turn around and go back to Osfrid. If my father finds out, I'll be the one who gets in trouble." I slipped into the act and crossed my arms over my chest. Nerves would be a lot easier to explain to Jasper than a slur on my virtue.
"I told you, there's nothing you can say to change my mind."
Cedric sighed dramatically.
"Why won't you just listen to reason?"
The sailor's eyes shifted between the two of us, and I didn't like the way he looked at me. I also didn't think he believed us. Cedric removed his hand from his pocket and reached for the opposite one, producing a small bag. He withdrew 3 silver coins from it and held them out to the sailor.
"I'm sure you understand the need for discretion until I can talk her out of this.
No need for anyone else to know. The sailor didn't hesitate to snatch up the coins. I'd been right about the fingers.
Yes, sir. I certainly do. I'm as discreet as they come. You can trust old Lefty, that you can. I won't tell anyone about your, doubts.
He bobbed his head deferentially, and then picked up a small crate before retreating. He gave us one last leer, and then exited, closing the door behind him. I groaned and sank back against the wall. Great. Just great. I knew it was only a matter of time before this all fell apart.
It did nothing of the sort, Cedric replied. He didn't see the painting, and he's not going to talk anyway.
Really? You think so? I'm sorry, but I can't feel that confident about trusting our fate to someone called Old Lefty. I paused. And why is he called that, if that's the hand missing the fingers? Why not take a positive spin and go with Old Righty?
He's not going to talk, Cedric reiterated. The silver will ensure that.
And future silver, seeing as I'm sure he'll approach me later wanting a bonus to further his discretion. I raised an eyebrow. I wasn't aware you had all that much silver to just throw around.
I don't, but some expenses are necessary, and if all of this works out, it won't matter.
Let's hope so. My gaze fell on the pocket of his coat.
What's there?
Why'd you reach for it? Cedric hesitated, and then produced a gleaming dagger. The hilt was silver, engraved with an intricate tree pattern.
A ritual blade.
The Angel Oziel's blade. That's the tree of life, that connects all living things in this world to the next. I was too surprised to even make a joke about him worshipping trees after all.
You were going to attack him with that?
If that's what it took. I didn't know his intentions.
Cedric grew thoughtful a few moments and then held out the dagger to me.
Here. It's beautiful, but I don't really want some pagan knife.
Forget the religious implications. Keep it in case you find yourself in a situation where you need it.
That night I got the holly. You told me to drop my knife before I hurt someone. Well, I was worried you'd hurt me, but anyone else, they're fair game. I don't really know how to use this, I said, taking the weapon in spite of myself.
You'll figure it out. You've always been good at defending yourself. But here's a tip to get you started. If someone attacks you, just point the blade away from you and start hacking.
I see. I didn't know you had a second job as a weapons master. The strongest wave we'd hit so far tumbled us into each other. A few items nearby shifted violently, and I nearly stabbed Cedric.
Probably not a good idea to have that out with all these waves, he said.
I tucked the blade away, knowing I'd have to conceal it carefully among my belongings, lest I be caught with an Alanzan artifact. I glanced around us as the ship swayed.
Is it just a few waves?
We got into this because the captain went to take the wheel, remember?
I could see Cedric considering this, that maybe we should have paid more attention to why the stateroom we'd raided had been abandoned in the first place.
I'm sure it's... Another jolt sent us reeling, and a crate fell, smashing beside us.
I think we should go, he said.
I followed him out of the cargo room as wave after powerful wave rocked us.
With no formalities or care for who saw, he hurried me quickly down the corridor, taking me to the glittering quartz common room.
Just before we entered, I pulled him back. Cedric, you never told me. What am I to you?
You are...
He started to lift a hand to my face, and then dropped it. Out of my reach. I closed my eyes for a heartbeat as I let those words burn through me. My world swayed, and not because of the storm outside. I turned away, scared to meet his eyes, and entered the room. There, a pale-faced Miss Bradley paced, surrounded in the rest of our girls.
"Thank Euros, you're here," she said, upon seeing us. "I just heard from Master Jasper. We're in some kind of storm. The captain said it came out of nowhere. We're ordered to stay below."
"I need to go back out," Cedric said.
I'd been about to sit and shot back up.
"What? It's dangerous. Now isn't the time to do something stupid."
"Adelaide," scolded Miss Bradley, obviously not aware of the informality between Cedric and me.
"No more stupid than usual," he replied, and disappeared out the door.
I looked around the room, assessing my cohorts. Some stood alone, fighting their fear in their own stoic way. Others huddled in groups, crying and wailing. I did a quick head count and noticed we were one short.
Mira! Where's Mira?
Miss Bradley shook her head, clearly distracted by her own panic.
I don't know. We'll just have to hope she took refuge in some other room.
A sickening feeling, intensified by the almost constant rolling and rocking of the ship, welled up within me. Mira wasn't in some other room. I was certain of it. She'd probably been on one of her illicit above-deck excursions. She was resourceful, but would she be able to get below in time? I strode to the door, my gait unsteady. I have to find her. I have to make sure she's safe. I struggled to make my voice heard above the creaking of the ship and wind wailing outside, both of which seemed to be increasing by the minute.
"Adelaide!" exclaimed Miss Bradley. "You were most certainly not!"
She took a step toward me, but a wave threw her off balance. I moved out the door, not looking back. Getting through the corridor was a terrifying ordeal. The lurching of the ship kept slamming me into the walls, and my progress was slow. My whole world was disordered, and I became more aware than ever that I was in a great expanse of water, in a small enclosure of wood. I'd never, ever felt such fear, not even when sneaking out of Ostro. Then I'd risked the punishment of man. This was the wrath of nature. I finally reached one of the hatches that allowed access above. I climbed upward and was entirely unprepared for the mighty wind that slammed into me. It pushed me back, sharp and cold with stinging sleet. The sky above us was a sickly greenish-grey, and everything around me was in motion. Sailors ran, following the barked orders of the captain and first mate, grabbing lines and securing loose items. I was soaked in an instant, pushed into a post by another blast of wind. A wave that seemed to reach up to the sky rolled into us, nearly turning the ship on its side. My grip on the pole held me steady, but I saw many sure-footed sailors tossed about, screaming and desperately seeking to hold on to something, anything. Between the haze of the blowing sleet and the stinging of my eyes, I could barely see. But then, across the deck, I caught sight of a familiar form. Mira sat on the deck, pinned by a large broken beam that had fallen across her. She was dangerously close to the ship's edge, giving me a sudden sense of déjà vu to all the times I'd worried about her standing by it. Without hesitation, I hurried to her, as much as I could hurry in such conditions. Most sailors didn't even notice me in their frantic scrambling, but I got a second glance when I passed old Lefty.
"What are you doing, girl?"
he shouted.
"Get below!"
I pointed to Mira.
"Get help! You have to get it off her!"
"You get it off her!"
he snapped back.
"We've got to keep this ship from sinking!"
He left, and I moved swiftly to Mira's side. Fine. If it was up to me to move it, I would do it. I knelt and tried to pull the beam away from her, but couldn't budge it.
"It's too heavy!" she yelled to me. "Leave me and get back below!"
"Never!" I shot back, tugging and pulling more. Splinters dug into my fingers, and my muscles burned. I managed to shift it slightly, but I was nowhere near setting her free. If it was so immobile, I suppose that meant Mira wasn't going to fly off the ship any time soon, but I'd feel better if she were below with everyone else. Steeling myself, I strained again, swearing I'd get it off her no matter the cost to myself. Nearing tears, I was startled when another set of hands suddenly joined me. It was Grant Elliot. I hadn't seen him throughout most of the voyage. He'd made a couple more attempts to talk to me during our first week aboard, and after that he'd all but disappeared.
"Pull with me!"
he barked, in a tone much different than the genteel one he'd used on me. He glowered when the beam remained obstinate.
"Damn it, are you even trying, girl?"
"Of course I am," I yelled back. "You both need to go,"
attempted Mira.
"Be quiet,"
Grant snapped to her. To me, he said,
"We'll do it on the count of three. Put all the strength you've got into it, and then dig up some you didn't even know you had. 1, 2, 3!
We pulled, and I did what he'd ordered, digging deep into my reserves. I felt like my own arms were going to get ripped off, but Grant and I finally lifted the beam just enough for Mira to slide out a leg and free herself. He helped her unsteadily to her feet.
"Can you walk?"
She gave a shaky nod, but as she moved forward, it was obvious her ankle was slowing her down. Grant and I each took one of her arms and helped her,
making our coordination that much more difficult in the treacherous conditions. Winds wailed around us, mingling with the sailors' cries. More than one yelled at us to get below, but most rushed past, uncaring if we fell overboard. We finally made it across the rolling deck to one of the entrances below. As we were about to enter, Mira pointed and cried,
"Adelaide!"
I followed where she indicated. It took a moment to see what she was pointing to, since nearly everything was a blur from the storm. But then far out on the dark waters, in the haze of the tempest, I could make out what her sharp eyes had seen. The grey gull. It was a little farther out than it usually was from us, and from this distance it appeared to be tossed about on the waves like a child's toy, rocking precariously back and forth. Sometimes it tipped so far right or left that I was certain there was no way it could right itself. Tamsin. Tamsin was aboard it. Did we look the same to them? Were we flailing that much? I had no time to give it much thought.
"Stop gaping, go!"
Grant ordered us.
"Hurry!"
We made it below, but all we gained was a reprieve from the sleet and wind. The ship still pitched frightfully. Grant saw us back to the glittering quartz common room and turned around.
"Where are you going?"
Mira asked. He barely glanced back.
"To see if any other fools need help."
Mira watched him dash away, her eyes smoldering with anger.
"Men get to do everything.
You want to go back out there?
I'd rather do something useful than sit around and worry about my dress being wet."
Miss Bradley caught sight of us in the doorway.
"Girls, get in here. Thank Euros, you're safe."
A number of the girls were praying to the god. A few others had gotten sick, but that was a small thing compared to everything else going on. Mira and I found a corner and sat down, wrapping our arms around each other.
"Are you sure you're okay?"
I asked.
She nodded, touching her ankle.
"It's sore, but nothing's broken. A sprain at most."
I was lucky. The beam just fell in a way to trap me, but didn't crush it.
I held her closer, trying to hold back my tears. "You saw that ship? Tamsin's over there."
"She'll be okay," Mira said fiercely. "She's a survivor. She won't let a storm stop her from landing a rich husband."
But neither of us could find any humor in the thought. And really, I supposed we should worry just as much about ourselves, as the roiling seas continued to toss us around. We clung to each other like that for hours, each of us holding our breath when we hit one of those tremendous waves that seemed certain to capsize us. It must have been the middle of the night by then, but there was no way any of us could sleep. A lull came at one point, making me think we'd escaped. But it was short-lived before the storm swept us up again, plunging us into another excruciating vigil. When the heaving subsided again, returning us to a calmer pace, I didn't trust it. I braced myself for another return of the tempest, but it didn't come. Mira lifted her head from my shoulder and raised her gaze to mine, each of us thinking the same thing. Was it possible this was over? Our answer came a little while later when Cedric arrived in our room. He too was pale, obviously shaken by what we'd just endured. He scanned the room, taking note of Mira and me in particular, and then turned to Miss Bradley. "My father talked to the captain and we're out of it. Amazingly, no one was lost, and there was no damage to the ship. It's unclear how the cargo fared, but we'll figure that out later." Around me, girls gave small cries of relief. "It's still night, and as soon as the clouds clear, the captain can assess our position. In the meantime, get what rest you can." He left, and many of the girls took him up on the suggestion. Mira and I couldn't sleep. We stayed together, adrenaline pushing us past exhaustion. The seas remained calm, and I did manage kind of a hazy trance near the end. Mira, who must have been keeping track of the time in her head, looked over at Miss Bradley. Our chaperone hadn't slept either.
"It must be morning, ma'am," Mira said. "Can we go above to see what's happened?"
Miss Bradley hesitated. I knew her better judgment counseled we stay below, but her own curiosity won out.
"All right," she said. "If we go together, they may send us back below."
She led us and the girls who were awake through the corridor and then up to the deck. Grey morning light greeted us, and we found we weren't the only ones whose curiosity had been piqued. Many of our fellow passengers, including Jasper and Cedric, stood gazing around. Signs of damage and disarray were everywhere, but the ship sailed on,
strong and true. Sailors scurried around to make repairs and keep us moving.
Look,
said Grant, coming up beside us. He pointed to the west. Mira and I turned, jaws dropping when we saw a dark, greenish line on the far horizon.
I could have sworn that storm blew us to the ninth hell. But if so, it apparently blew us back, he said. That's Cape Triumph.
Adoria, I whispered. Slowly a burst of joy flowered within me, penetrating the numbed state I'd been in since the storm. I turned toward Mira and saw my excitement mirrored in her. Adoria! Somehow, by the grace of Euros, we'd survived the storm and reached the new world. I glanced around eagerly, expecting to see all of my companions gleeful and dancing. A few girls shared our excitement, but almost everyone else was subdued. Grim, even. That included Cedric and his father. I caught Cedric's eye and was startled by the haunted look I saw there. "What's wrong?" I asked. He nodded toward a sailor who was holding a broken piece of wood. I stepped closer, trying to identify it. It looked like part of a woman's face. I stiffened, knowing where I'd seen it before. The grey gull's figurehead.
"Fished it out of the water," he said.
"No," I said. "No, it can't be." And that's when I noticed our sister ship was nowhere in sight. Every day of the trip it had been in orbit, sometimes ahead, sometimes behind, but always, always close by. But not any longer. The first mate standing nearby gave a sad nod.
"The grey gull has been lost."
Chapter 12. Docking in Adoria was a blur. I stood on the deck with the other girls, watching as the shore loomed closer and closer. Vaguely I noted I'd never seen so many trees in my life. Though Cape Triumph was one of the oldest Ospridian cities in the New World, it was clear that the wilderness still wasn't tamed, and the trees were huge, like sentinels guarding this strange shore. Mira stood beside me, her hands tightly clenched. Her face, as I'm sure mine did, wore a haunted look. I should have felt excitement. My heart should have hammered with anticipation. After all, this was what I'd been waiting for. The culmination of all my planning, starting with the day I'd sent Ada away. But I could take no joy in this moment. There was a leadenness inside of me, a coldness I was certain would never go away.
"Raise our banner!"
ordered Jasper. His brisk command penetrated my haze, and I slowly turned my head. He'd been as stunned as the rest of us upon discovering the wreckage of the grey gull. Soon he'd shifted to anger, berating the other ship's captain and crew for the great material and human loss he'd just suffered. That had ended when our captain curtly remarked that if anyone was to blame, it was Jasper himself for insisting upon a late winter crossing, putting us at risk for storms like the one from last night. And so Jasper had soon shifted back to his indifferent, business-like mode, almost as though the storm had never happened. The crew raised the glittering quartz banner, positioning it just under the great Ospridian flag. Jasper surveyed it with satisfaction, and then turned to Miss Bradley.
"Once that's spotted, the word'll spread like wildfire."
He jerked his head toward where the other girls and I huddled together. "We'll reach shore in a few hours. Make sure they're ready." Miss Bradley's face was ashen in the grey morning light.
"Ready, sir?"
"Half of our potential buyers will be down there, waiting to see what we've brought. I need this group dolled up to their finest, showing off everything they've learned last year. What happened to the grey gull changes nothing."
"Yes, of course, sir,"
she replied, her face paling further.
"Girls, you heard him. Let's go below decks and get you changed. You're a bedraggled lot."
The others started to move, used to following instructions, but I stood rooted to where I was. I stared incredulously at Jasper, grasping not for courage but for the right words to express my outrage.
"Changes nothing! How can you say that? It changes everything. A ship full of people just died, half our girls, my best friend. Don't you care? Do you really expect us to just prance off this ship and start flirting and smiling?"
Jasper regarded me unblinkingly.
"I expect you to do what you came here to do.
to make a match that's beneficial to you and me. The Grey Gull is a great loss. I'm perfectly aware of that. And my business will take a huge hit because of it. The rest of you are still able to carry out our purpose here. You'll put on the clothes I've bought you and walk off the ship looking as though you're happy to be here.
I took a step toward him, undaunted by neither his size nor status.
Well, I won't. And I'm not.
I get that I'm here to play a part, that I'm here to be a doll you can display for the highest bidders. But nothing in my contract says I have to shut down my feelings, that I can ignore that tragedy. Maybe you should have added heartlessness to our curriculum, since you seem to be such an expert.
Adelaide, said Miss Bradley aghast, how dare you speak to Mr. Thorne that way?
You are certainly entitled to your opinion, Jasper told me coolly. And Euros knows you've never hesitated to express it. But you signed a contract taking on this purpose, and this purpose is about to begin. If you'd rather opt out and return to a workhouse in Osfrid, that can be arranged.
Maybe I will.
I turned my back on him and stormed away, ignoring Miss Bradley's protests. I paid little heed to where I was going, pushing past startled crew and passengers. I reached one of the entrances to the ship's interior, and moved through the labyrinthine passages until I found myself back in the cargo room with the painting. I hadn't realized this was where I was headed, but I wasn't entirely surprised this was where my heart led. On this voyage, it was really the only space that had been my own. I sank to the floor against the wall, burying my face in my hands as great sobs racked my body. Tears of anger mingled with sadness as I raged at the world. I hated the fickle winter weather that had brought us to this point. I hated Jasper for making us go on as though everything was normal. And I hated myself. I hated myself most of all, because if not for me, Tamsin would have never been on that ship. I didn't notice Cedric coming in until he was right beside me.
Adelaide.
When I didn't respond or look up, he repeated, Adelaide. My sobs diminished, but I was still sniffling as I finally lifted my head.
The others are looking for you, he said, his face grave.
Miss Bradley's beside herself. She thinks some sailor carried you off.
Then tell her I'm fine. That I needed to be alone.
But you aren't fine. That previous anger surged up in me and I shot to my feet.
Why? Because I can't go through with this charade? Because I want to mourn like a feeling human being?
He rose to stand before me. Everyone wants to mourn. No one's dismissing what happened.
Your father is, I pointed out.
A pained expression passed over Cedric's face. He's not entirely unfeeling. But he's dominated by his business sense, and his business sense is telling him we need to make the same grand entrance that the glittering court always makes. Once we reach the house, I heard him telling Miss Bradley, we'll take a little more downtime than usual before the ball season kicks off.
And then we go on like nothing's ever happened, I stated. Dancing, smiling, dressing up.
Adelaide, what do you expect?
Yes, my father's callous. But he's right that we're here for a reason. We can't just call it off because of what happened to the Grey Gull.
I slumped against the wall and closed my eyes.
Tamsin was on that ship.
I know.
Do you know why?
I asked, focusing back on him.
Because of me. Because of what I did. Because of that stunt I pulled with the exams.
Adelaide, I don't regret helping you, I continued. I owed you. But I should have told her. I should have told her about my past and trusted that as my friend she would keep my secrets. But I was too proud, too stubborn and caught up in my own importance. And now she's dead.
Because of me.
He gently put his arms around me and tried to draw me to him. A fleeting memory of our moment with the honey cake stirred within me, and I pushed back from him.
I couldn't deal with that. Not right now.
You can't think like that, he said. It's not your fault.
Really? Then whose fault is it? Whose fault is it she was on that ship?
Hers. She made that decision. And she was just as stubborn as you. We're all in charge of our own lives, and we have to live with the consequences of the choices we make.
Those tears threatened to return, and I blinked, refusing to let them have power over me. Just like I have since I traded places with Ada. And now you're saying I need to keep on with what I started, that I need to go catch my